Welcome to church. How you feeling today? Come on. You excited for this?
Woo!
Well, hey, I just want to welcome you. If you're new, my name is Tim, the lead pastor here, and it's an honor just to have you today. Can I just say this up front? I'm really excited and slightly nervous about what we're about to talk about for the next several weeks, is we're going to dive into this topic that is a really popular one, I think, not just within the church, but even outside the church, this idea of the end of the world. The end of the age. Is there going to be an apocalyptic ending to our world? I think this is a topic that fascinates people, that scares people. And so be praying for me, because this is one of the more complicated matters to dive into. In fact, being really transparent and honest, I have avoided talking about this for quite some time because it is confusing at times for people. It's scary. Here's one thing I know is that all of us, probably to one degree or another, have like really strong opinions, and I have found people are really passionate about their opinions when it comes to the end times. And so I thought we're gonna lean into it. Let me tell you, one of the things that I've noticed in culture is that whenever there are certain events that happen, it tends to trigger a new wave of panic or fear. This happened, I think, kind of recently, last fall, when Israel was attacked by Hamas. And that kind of set off into this awful war that's been going on ever since. And whenever there's like controversy and conflict in the Middle East, specifically with Israel, all of a sudden people, like, I know that there were entire groups of people that in the church or the Christian world, this started to sound the alarm. This is the end. It's here. It's near. Everything is falling together. We're getting ready for the Battle of Armageddon. It's about to take place. And it's just, and all of a sudden, like, there was a little bit of a kind of a fever pitch that was growing in how people kind of saw the current events. Did you notice that? Did you feel that? Did anybody feel that? I mean, it was, you could sense there's a stirring in this, and I've noticed that there are all kinds of other current events that people like to look and pick from and I think kind of apply meaning to. Like, for example, I had no idea when we were getting ready to talk about the series planning for the year. This is probably about 4 months ago. I wanted to do this series, and so I just threw it on the calendar. I was looking for, okay, look, I'm already doing this. I need a window, you know, where I have enough weeks to talk about it. I said, you know what? I'm going to stick it on after Easter. That'd be fun. Let's talk about it. After Easter, I had no idea that the solar eclipse was happening tomorrow. Sign? I don't know. I just, pretty crazy, you know. And I don't know how many of you have, in your feed, have seen all of the social media scholars out there telling us about the solar eclipse and what it represents and means. How many of you seen that? Just raise your hand if you have. Okay. And so if you haven't, let me just tell you, there are people that are looking for a sign to match up with some kind of thing that we find in Revelation or in something Jesus said, Matthew 24, Luke 21. Okay. And so I don't know if you've seen this, but there are people that have talked about the solar eclipse we had 7 years ago, which, by the way, seven, number in the Bible, just saying, Revelation, serious, okay? There's a solar eclipse that went through, full eclipse that went through America 7 years ago, went through certain cities we kind of found, and now, here we are 7 years later, and there's another one that's coming through, different path, okay? And when you look at these two solar eclipses, this is just crazy, and I went to NASA and I pulled up their site. When you look at these two on a map, it does this right over America, which some people think means God's impending judgment on America. I look at it and think, oh, ex-church right over America. Amen. Yeah. It just depends on how you see it, you know? I mean, there are serious. People are freaking out. This is it, you know, the solar eclipse, and there's a sign, the sun will grow dark, and all this, and maybe, it's maybe true, and maybe that's it. Now, I thought to myself, okay, if God is speaking through the solar eclipse, I did. I thought, if this is it, and you look at these last two, and it formed this, I thought to myself, what must God have been trying to say to us not just over the last two, but all of them. And, you know, they've been tracked by NASA since 1851 all the way up, and they're projected all the way through the rest of the century. And when I looked at all of them, I got to be honest, this is freaking out. And I put them all together to kind of say, God, what is the message that you have for America? You put them all together, and it looks like this. And I think God's really angry with America. And he got out his crayon, and he went, "Arr!" Now, if some of you just got offended because you're so certain that it is a sign of impending judgment, and it could be. I'm not going to say it's not, okay? I don't want to, but I know, well, here's what I'm probably going to say some things that are going to confront some things that you hold to be true that it's quite possible aren't really biblical, but might be, you know, just like your perspective or interpretation. And what I'm saying is you might get a little bit offended. I understand that. We can't talk about this without kind of challenging. I might step on your eschatological toes a little bit when it comes to this, okay? And if you get really mad, this is what I want you to know. There's a bit of a recourse you have. If you get really mad, feel free to send me an email, okay? I love it when people are mad and they send in emails. I love it. So if you get mad, send in an email, but send it to, I have a personal account that really is my nickname. And so you can just send it to russ.moore@thex.church. And I'd be happy to just entertain all of your concerns and how I offended you. This is going to be such a fun series. I can't wait. Here's the thing. There's a group of people that are always trying to find a symbol in every single thing happening. And I don't know what your experience was with church, but for me, when it comes to the book of Revelation, there's often been a lot of fear, dread, and even terror. Partially because of what I was exposed to, I think, even as a kid and growing up. I grew up around church, and so I remember we had a youth pastor that thought it would be a great idea to show all of the very impressionable teenagers some really scary movies. I'm not talking about Left Behind. Those are other ones. I'm talking about before that. There were some movies that were made in the 70s and 80s that literally were just like B-rated Christian horror films. And stories about people who were just going about their day, and they kind of went to church here and there, but they weren't really. And then the rapture happened. Millions of people just disappeared. And all of a sudden, God's judgment. It's called A Thief in the Night, if you want to go look it up. There's a whole series of them. Scare you to death. And some of you are shaking your head. You're like, "Oh, I remember it." And you missed the rapture train, and that's bad news. But then you're like, "I got to get serious now." But then if you don't get the mark of the beast, then they were going to bring you out, and they basically had guillotines. They would chop everybody's heads off if you don't, like, I'm like 17 years old. "Dear Lord, forgive me. Forgive me of every sin I've ever done. Dear Lord, forgive me. Forgive me." 5 minutes later, "Dear Lord, forgive me. Dear Lord, forgive me." I didn't sleep for 3 days. And it brought fear. And at the same time, there's well-known pastors, preachers getting out their big charts and charting the whole thing out, talking about the blood moons and everything is going to happen. It just brings more and more fear. And here's what I want to caution us. Be careful that we haven't kind of developed our, I know it's a term we don't use a lot, theology about the end through all kinds of cultural expressions rather than a scriptural understanding. Because there's some good books, Left Behind. Can I remind you? They're fiction. They're fiction. Movies, they're fiction. They're clever. But you know how many people have gone, "Oh, that's what's going to happen?" And I'm saying, "No, it's not." And the sad reality is some of these things have been so ingrained culturally that to think otherwise, people yell out, "Heresy! That's heresy." And I'd say, no, we're using that term incorrectly, okay? And what I want us to understand is that this is confusing, complicated waters that we're going to walk through, some of it. And I want you to understand that there is room in it for us to see things a little bit differently and even potentially disagree with some things. That's okay. There is some room for that. And because we're not all gonna maybe interpret or understand this the same way. I had a couple that was a part of our church last year, a sweet couple that had been coming to our church for a few months, and they approached me one Sunday morning before I was getting ready to preach, and they ran into me and they said, Pastor, we're just curious, like, are you ever planning to do like a message or a series like on the end times, on the book of Revelation, and I was like, oh, I said, I did once. By the way, the last time I did a series on this was 2012. And I don't know if you guys remembered what was happening in 2012, but the Mayans, a civilization that no longer exists, had a calendar, and the calendar ended December 21st, 2012. Everybody at that time was freaking out, panicked. That's the end of the world. So we did a series on Revelation in the month of December. I call it the last series. I said, this is the last series I'll ever preach. And yet we still scheduled and promoted our Christmas experiences after December 21st. And we showed up for them, and it was great. But they came to me, this couple, and they were like, are you ever going to preach? I'm like, honestly, I kind of avoid this subject. And they're like, oh, you do? I was like, yeah, just because it tends to create a lot of controversy and sometimes division, and it's kind of confusing, and people are very sure of what they know is going to happen. And they looked at me like, oh, no, we understand. We get it, Pastor. We totally get it. And I said, why do you guys like this? And they're like, oh, we do. We for years, we teach an entire curriculum on this in our small groups, and we just love it. And I said, that's cool. I said, I love that you love it. But I just said, I understand in a church like ours that there are people who have a lot of different views about, say, things like tribulation, pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib, pre-millennial, amillennial period, like all this stuff. Now, you have no idea what I just said. Man, you're good, okay? You just don't need to worry about it. And is there a rapture, and is it going to happen, and is there a pre-trib, all this stuff. And so I just said, you know, there's so many different views, and honestly, I'm okay. Like, man, I don't feel like kind of debating half the time. And they're like, oh, we understand totally. I think you would agree, Pastor, it's absolutely clear through the scriptures that the rapture is going to happen pre-trib. And I said, maybe. Yeah, just like that. I was like, maybe. I was like, maybe. But I said, I could argue from scripture that it's not. And they were like, oh, really? I was like, yeah. And so I just kind of like, you know, and they were like, oh, okay. It was a really awkward ending. I said, oh, okay. Well, I'm glad you guys like that. Maybe someday. And I walked away. They've never been back to our church since. So it's sad, but it's true. And so I realized how controversial this is for some reason. And I think, first of all, let's not take ourselves so seriously a little bit. I think sometimes, can I just say this about Christians in general? They are so crazy and serious and don't understand that sometimes we look and sound really wacky to the rest of the world. And I get that. I get that, okay? But let's just not be over the top on it. And then let me just tell you what changed for me. Because I was like, I don't really want to dive into this. And then last year, I read a book called 2084 by a guy named John Lennox. And I really love John Lennox. He's an apologist, a mathematician. And he challenged me by something he said in a video interview on it. Now, 2084, if you want to read it, it's an interesting book that kind of ties together in a strange way artificial intelligence and the end of the world. Kind of interesting. And he's a theologian and takes an interesting approach. I enjoyed the book. It was a lot. And so I'm watching this interview that he does on it, and he said something that captivated me. He said, you know, everything that God's given us, including in the book of Revelation, it means something, and it's important. And he said, the problem is certain group of people within the church have hijacked it. And he said, I think we need to take it back from the crazies. And I thought to myself, you're right. We need to take this back from the crazy extreme people that have kind of painted some pictures that I think have caused a lot more fear than anything else. And I thought, let's take it back from the crazies. Some of you might be thinking, I think you're crazy. Well, if that's the case, then you're going to be right in line for this. You're going to love it. And so I just thought we're going to dive into probably for 7 weeks. And I don't have time to go through all of it, but we're going to hit some really important themes that I think a lot of us are curious about what Scripture has to say about the end. So, are you ready? Yes. You ready to do it? Come on, I need to know if you're ready. Yes. Okay, here's what I want to encourage you. Today is going to be very introductory. Today is going to give us a framework so how we can understand this. Here's what I want to challenge you to do, okay? I want to challenge you to take notes. There are some things that we're going to talk about that I think are kind of stuff that we're gonna need to wrestle with through this entire series. Now, great way that you can do that, and I wanna encourage you how you can follow along is our new app. And so if you don't have it, you can get it. But on our app, we have some things on there that are gonna help you in this journey. We have a reading plan, okay? So we've actually got two reading plans, one we submitted that we're waiting on, and another one that will help you get started on knowing how to read the book of Revelation. So if you don't have the app, I wanna encourage you, you can download it. The QR code's on the seat back in front of you, on the screen. Download it, log in on the home screen, and you're gonna see one of the YouVersion plans that you can join, and do it with some friends. When you start a plan, go, hey, come on, my 5, 6 friends. Invite them to do it with you. It's fun. And it'll help you get a framework for how to read Revelation. Then we're gonna offer another one soon that is just gonna help you read through the entire book with some extra passages. It's gonna be awesome. Okay, so I wanna encourage you to do that and engage with us. And then also, I know that there are a lot of questions. I've been bombarded by people who've said, oh, I'm so glad we're talking about this, and this is gonna be so helpful. And I imagine you have a ton of questions. You can, again, use the app to submit questions. On there, there's a little form where you can put a question in there. I have a question about this concept or the rapture or this, or is that real? Is this really gonna happen? When is Jesus? Okay, put your questions in there. My goal is to try to answer some during this series. And we're gonna probably use the podcast to really sit down and walk through. So I wanna try to address your questions that you have when it comes to the end time. So I wanna encourage you to do that, all right? Now, if you have your Bible or your phone with you, we're gonna start at Revelation chapter 1. And so if you wanna get it out, we're gonna dive right in. Today, again, introduction, just gonna help build a framework for how we are to think about the end times. Now, in order for us to really understand and unpack this well, we need a little bit of context. In fact, this is a really important series where we need context, okay? The book of Revelation was written by a guy named John, and you're gonna see that in a moment. I'll read a little portion that helps us understand that. Now, it's debated as to which John this is. Some people would say it's Jesus' close disciple or the apostle John. There are other people that say because of the style of the writing that's so different from the gospel, that it's a different John that was maybe a church leader of what you're gonna see some churches in Asia at the time. Here's what we do know. This guy John wrote down this revelation around 95 or 96 AD. And at the time, the emperor of Rome was a guy named Domitian. And Domitian was really persecuting Christians. John was a leader in the church, and at the time, John was preaching about Jesus. And guess what? Rome didn't like that. So what do you do if you want to stop somebody from preaching about Jesus? Well, this is what they did with John. They tried him and convicted him of things against Caesar, teaching against Caesar. When they're saying Jesus is Lord, that's a capital offense. It can be. And so they exiled him and put him into an island prison called Patmos. Basically, we want you to stop talking about this Jesus. What's the best way to do it? Remove him so that he can't have anybody to talk to, and stick him on a deserted island, this island called Patmos. It was basically a prison island where he would live out the rest of his days, not be able to get off the island and die. So what you need to understand is John, who has this revelation there, But it's important to understand who he's writing this to. What's going on in the church? See, from the moment Jesus' resurrection and the church got started on the day of Pentecost, the church had been growing, started in Jerusalem and was expanding all over the place. And it was just growing and it was getting more and more ground, and the church was being persecuted first by the Jewish ruling leaders. And they would try to get Rome to do their dirty work just like they did with Jesus. Well, eventually, things turned in 64 AD, where it got turned where Rome began to single out the church themselves. Before that, Rome didn't care. These little pocket of Christians, they're nothing. We didn't care about that. But what happened is in 64 AD, the emperor at the time was a guy named Nero. Maybe you've heard of him. And there was a great fire that took place in Rome in 64 AD. Some historians think that Nero started the fire. There was a historic district that they couldn't touch, that he wanted to build these gardens, and so just so happens a fire burned them down. But, okay, whether Nero started the fire or not, we don't know. But what Nero needed was an enemy, somebody trying to attack Rome. Guess who he made the enemy? Christians. And at this point, Rome begins to turn on Christians, and they begin to persecute. If you won't say Caesar is Lord, instead of they were saying Jesus is Lord, then all kinds of awful things happened. Many of them were killed by crucifixion. They were hung on poles, and they were doused in oil and lit on fire alive at night. They were wrapped in the skins of freshly killed animals, tied up, and then allow wild animals and lions to come eat them. Okay, this is what Nero kind of like started, this assault that continued for the next 3 decades, okay? And again, a little context of what matters later in the story, but Jewish people revolted against Rome in 66 AD. Rome sent all of its soldiers down, wiped out Jerusalem, destroyed the temple. This is kind of significant today because there's all kinds of talk about the Temple Mount. This stuff happened. 70 AD, the temple was destroyed. That was something Jesus prophesied about in Matthew 24. And ever since then, the Christians were persecuted. And so here's what you need to know. It was really hard to be a follower of Jesus back then. Always living under the threat of losing your life or family members or people being imprisoned. This is the context in which this revelation was given. And when we look at Revelation chapter 1, verse 1, and some of you go, there's book titles where they pull it from the first few words of Revelation 1. Let me talk about the title real quick. Okay, let me read Revelation 1, just the very first sentence. Here's what it says. It says, this is a what? Can you all say that word out loud? This is important. Here's where we get the title from. This is a revelation from Jesus Christ. Some translations say of Jesus Christ. It is both. Which God gave him to show his servants the events that must soon take place. Now, just a little note here. It is a revelation of Jesus. And from Jesus, it is not revelations. Okay. It's just me. I get it. But whenever you talk about this book, please refer to it as the book of Revelation, not revelations. Okay? It's not revelations. It's a revelation of Jesus and from Jesus of the events that are taking place. Okay? And so, this word revelation, this is kind of interesting. This word revelation actually is the Greek word, okay, this is the Greek word, apocalypsis. Apocalypsis. You probably recognize our English word we get from the apocalypse. Now, let me give you the definition of apocalypsis. The definition is this: it's an uncovering, it's an unveiling, or a divine revelation, okay? Here's the thing. Today, when we hear the word apocalypse, what do we think about? We think about the end of the world. We think about catastrophe. We think about nuclear bombs going off. We think about massive wars, Battle of Armageddon. We think about World War III or the end of the world. That's not what this word means, okay? It's kind of culturally, because of the content and everybody's scared of it, it's kind of morphed into apocalypse. So people will say, oh, we got that apocalyptic snowstorm. That's not what this word means. The word apocalypse, that is important, means to pull back the curtain, to open the window, to unveil or to reveal something that is on the other side. So when you see Revelation, most of us, we hear Revelation, we're like, end times! But can I tell you, when the early church heard the apocalypse, they got excited. Because now we can understand what's going on. And so it's this idea of God pulling back the curtain. So this is important. Whenever we talk about apocalyptic literature in the Bible, and that's not just the book of Revelation, it's found in the Old Testament. You find it with prophets like Daniel and Isaiah and Ezekiel and Jeremiah and things Jesus said. Whenever you see apocalyptic literature, here's what I want you to understand, is that it's like a window into a different reality. It's God saying, John, I'm going to give you a glimpse of what exists that is more real than anything you experience. You just can't see it with your own eyes. And that's what apocalyptic literature is meant to do. Now, as we talk about the book of Revelation through this series and other places we're going to go as well, it's important that we understand how to think about apocalyptic literature. So here's what I want to do. I want to give you some guardrails, okay? I want to give you four guardrails that will help you when it comes to reading this book and other places where we read it and we go, oh my gosh, that's scary. What in the world does that mean? Let me give you four things. I kind of consider these guardrails. This is a framework for help you do this, okay? The first one is this. Apocalyptic literature uses imagery intended to evoke emotions. This kind of literature, it's intentionally using vivid imagery to evoke emotions, to stir something inside of you. This is not just, here's knowledge of what's going to happen. It never comes that way. It always comes to crazy, vivid, metaphoric language. For example, we understand this, right? When you read poetry, it's like beautiful and it's always comparing this as like a golden sunset, da 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 da. These fields of wheat and harvest are like the sunset going to the... We understand that it's trying to help us understand and imagine it. Well, that is what apocalyptic literature is intended to do. It's most of the time, let me say this, it is not literal. It is imagery meant to evoke an emotion and stir something in you. I'll give you an example. In the book of Revelation, we get this window, this picture into seeing Satan. You can read about it later. Revelation chapter 12. And in this, where we see Satan, he is depicted as a dragon with seven heads and seven crowns and 10 horns. Do you think Satan is really a dragon with seven heads and 10 horns? Well, I don't know. It's what John saw. I know. And in Genesis 3, he was a serpent. And there's other places where it says he masquerades like an angel of light. What is he? This is not Satan's true colors as he's a dragon, because we all got him kind of figured out as that little guy with the two horns and a pitchfork and running around with a red cape. No. This is imagery intended to evoke emotion inside of us. Okay, I want you to imagine with me, if you could, the book of Revelation is like a drama. Let's just say that it's like a movie or a play that God is putting on, trying to create a truth or tell us a truth that we don't see. Okay, just imagine this. So God's putting on this drama, and he needs characters and people to play. I need someone to play Satan. Who wants the leading role of Satan, right? And Bill decides he wants to play the leading role of Satan. And Bill, he's a great guy. He's a white guy. He's 5'9", has a kind of scruffy beard and a little bit of a pot belly. And God says, you know, Bill, I think you can do it. Why don't you play Satan? And so Bill doesn't wear a costume. He doesn't do any of that. He just comes out on the stage, and he goes, ah, I'm Satan. How many of you are scared by Bill? I'm like, I could take Bill. But if God wanted to paint a picture of pure evil, he does it in a way that the seven heads and the 10 horns represent something. And so what I'm trying to say is that so much of what we see is not what it really is, but it's a representation, and it's intended to stir something in us. Why? Because there are things in us that the church was facing such difficulty. There are challenges, and so God wanted to stir something in them. So here's what you need to know about apocalyptic literature. It is heavy on imagery, but it's intended to stir something, and it's metaphoric. A lot of it's metaphoric, okay? So that's the first guardrail. Second one is this, that Revelation is not to be read in a linear fashion. This is gonna be real helpful for some of you, because here's what most of us do. We apply our Western thinking to reading this book that is ancient and was written in an ancient culture to ancient people. It's different. See, we all think things chronologically in life. Time moves chronologically, and we think in those terms. And oh, by the way, we go left to right. Even though when you read Hebrew, it's right to left. There's a difference, okay? And so we think of events, and so here's what most people have done. And this is, I want to say this as kindly as I can, and I'm not saying I have all the answers, but I think one of the things that has led to some really misguided interpretation in Revelation is that people are reading it and they're like, oh, then that happened. And then in chapter 7, that happened. And then chapter 8, that comes after chapter 7. So then that's going to happen. And chapter 9 is going to come after 8. And so then that's going to. So we're just waiting because I think 7, maybe. Yep, 8, it's next. We're looking. Can I just suggest that we stop trying to apply our Western mindset to something that was never intended? This is a revelation. It is windows in to see things. Let me tell you this, past, present, and future. There are some visions of this revelation that John sees that are happening right now. There are some things that he sees happened a long time ago. I'll give you an example, real simple example, okay? Revelation chapter 12. You wanna read it on your own. Revelation 12 starts out, there's this woman who is pregnant, very pregnant, and she's about to give birth to a male child, okay? And it is said that the male child that she is gonna give birth to will rule the world with an iron scepter, okay? Ruler, supreme ruler. Woman giving birth to a male child, and oh, by the way, she's being chased and harassed by a dragon that we talked about, that's Satan, with 7 heads, 7 crowns, and 10 horns, and he's chasing it, and his goal is, as she gives birth to this male child who's going to rule the world, is the dragon was trying to kill the male child. Revelation 12. This is after the 7 seals. This is after certain things. This is Revelation 12, right in the middle of the book. Anybody have any guesses as what that's a picture of? Christmas. That is Christmas. You did not imagine the Christmas story like that. I'm thinking about preaching on dragons this Christmas. It's gonna be so good. Bring your kids, they're gonna love it. We're gonna talk about the Christmas dragon. And like, it is really, of all the really confusing, it's probably the most clear that this woman represents, some would say Mary, I think we can actually see represents Israel, that it was through the nation of Israel that God was going to bring his son into the world who was going to rule the world. And it, I mean, this is so clear. Read Revelation 12 on your own. You're gonna get this. And that there's Satan, the devil, the adversary, is trying to take out the male child. Oh, by the way, what does that remind me of? Oh yeah, when Jesus was born, what didn't King Herod issue an edict to have every male Hebrew boy, baby, under the age of 2 slaughtered? What was he doing? Trying to take out the male child that was gonna rule the entire world. So this is in the middle?
Yep.
So whenever we try to read chronologically, we get messed up. So here's what we're gonna do. When we think about apocalyptic literature, we're not gonna ask what happens next. Wrong question. Instead, we should ask, what does John see next? Not what happens next. Okay, are you following me? You tracking with me? This is why we've been so confused when it comes to the book of Revelation. Let me give you a third guardrail. Third guardrail is this. Revelation was given to others and for us. It was given to others, written to others, but for us. Here's what I mean by this. This revelation that John gets was not something that God said, John, this is a revelation for X church in Canal Winchester in 2024. But this was a revelation that God gave John for some churches in his day. In fact, let me read this to you, Revelation chapter 1, verses 9 through 11. Look at this with me if you want. It says this, I, John, your brother and companion in the suffering and kingdom and patient endurance that are ours in Jesus, was on the island of Patmos because of the word of God and the testimony of Jesus. Verse 10, on the Lord's day, that would be Sunday, by the way, I was in the Spirit, great place to be in the Lord's day. And I heard behind me a loud voice like a trumpet, which said, write on a scroll what you see and send it to the 7 churches, to Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamum, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and X Church. Laodicea, I guess. Here's what this means. I want you to follow me, okay? It is important that we try to do our best to interpret this through the lens of a first century follower of Jesus in a first century church. And not try to interpret this is what we do, through our Western 21st century mindset. This has happened for a long time, and I feel like this is why we continue to come up with all kinds of interpretations that are so far off and miss the boat altogether. Like, for example, I remember this one growing up. There was somebody that suggested that when John gets a revelation of seeing these creatures that are like locusts that have a different face and they got these tails and they're given the power to go around and sting people all over the world, that John didn't know what he was seeing because this was into the future, but it was actually helicopters. John was seeing helicopters. And he didn't know how to describe a helicopter, so he says it must be like a locust type thing. No, that's not what God does. Whenever God gives prophetic messages, whenever God speaks to people and he's trying to encourage people, even of things that are going to happen in the future, he always gives it to them in their context. It means something to them. Okay, this is really important. So we need to understand is the book of Revelation and other things that were given to them and for us. In other words, this initially was given to seven churches in Asia Minor. But when we try to understand it for them and what the encouragement was for them, then we can say, how does this impact us? And if this is true, this third guardrail, then the fourth guardrail is absolutely critical, and that is this. It cannot mean for us what it did not mean for them. If it was given to them and for us, then it cannot mean for us what it did not mean for them. Okay, in other words, we need to interpret it in what was God speaking through John to those early churches. And a lot of what's in here probably made more sense to them than we have made out of it, to be honest. It cannot mean for us what it did not mean for them. This is really important for us to have these guardrails, because I have watched throughout my childhood, growing up around church, and I have seen how this has been twisted around a lot of different ways. For example, I remember this in the, I think it was the 80s and 90s. Everybody's trying to figure out what the mark of the beast is. In fact, I think a lot of people are obsessed with the mark of the beast. So I've decided, it's like, okay, you know what? I think I'm going to talk about the mark of the beast one of these weeks. I'm talking about the beast and the mark of the beast, Revelation 13. I think I'm going to put that one on the list because I think people are like really curious about it. But I remember growing up where the mark of the beast was, it was like this. It was in the late 80s or 90s, everybody was fully convinced it was the UPC symbol. You know, on the back of all your food, the packages? Remember when that came out? Yeah, okay. Any of you, I love some of the more experienced people in our church that are just shaking their heads going, oh, I remember, Pastor. Because I remember when they started putting this on the products and there was all this talk about, you know, there's that big thick bar on the front and the big thick bar in the middle and big third bar in the third, and they got all these numbers. And if you take all the numbers and you add them up and then you multiply them by 14 and divide by 7 and square root them, they come out to something like 666. And so I think this is it. And if you get the mark of the beast on your right hand or your forehead, you're going to hell. It was like, oh, thank God, it's so obvious. Whew, I was afraid I was going to be deceived. People were coming out about the UPC symbol. It was terrible. And then when that kind of faded away, the next thing came up, chips. Oh, there's chips to everybody. Man, the military is going to put chips underneath of the skin. And they figured out that, you know, if you put it under the skin, it's like the perfect place and the right hand on the forehead because the temperature changes so much and it's just going to control the battery. It's going to keep it going. I don't know if any of you remember that, but I remember that, the chips. And we're so worried about the government. The government's going to track us. You won't be able to do anything without it. And I'm going, that's funny. Yeah, hello. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't want the government to find me. Maybe it's the mark of the beast. Everybody, government knows where you are. You notice that you can pay for stuff with your phone now? No. Okay, so you have that, and then after that, let's be honest, I heard this one too a couple years ago. It's the vaccine. Ooh, it's the vaccine. There's a chip inside of the vaccine. Let's not talk about how small the needles are, but I don't know if that's it. Okay, can I just say, here's what we're doing. We're constantly trying to interpret something that was intended for them through our lens, and it cannot mean for us what it did not mean for them. And we'll talk about this a little bit more, but the reason why I say it's important for us to have these guardrails is because I'm not trying to like say you don't know what's going to happen, but I want to say this as nicely as I can. A lot of what you thought was going to happen is definitely not going to happen. And a lot of what I've thought for many years is going to happen, I think is definitely not going to happen. And I think that this is kind of really confusing to fully understand. And here's what I want you to hear. I'm going to do my best to try to parse through the most conservative way I can in how to interpret and read scripture. I'm going to try to share things with you. And where there's like some people think it's this, I'll tell you. Some people may think this, and some people may think this, and I kind of think this. And some of you may care, you may not care. I don't care. Here's what I want you to know. My goal is this. I want to do my best. I want to do my best to try to share what I think is the best understanding interpretation we can get of Revelation. But I need you to hear this. Please hear this right now, okay? I don't have the answer key. It wasn't like God gave Pastor Tim the answer key. He knows what's gonna happen, so I don't know, okay? I'm gonna do my best, and I invite you. Here's what I wanna say. I invite you into this conversation together. And it's okay if we read it and we go, I think it's this, and I think it's that. I'm gonna be like, that's okay. We may not agree, but we can still be in community together when it comes to this, as long as we can all come together and agree on the main thing. Can we agree on the main thing? You know what I wanna tell you, I believe is the main thing when it comes to the book of Revelation? The main thing is the main character. It's the main character. And I want to show you who the main character is of the book of Revelation, okay? And I want to read to you, and here's what I believe. What is the main character? It's the very first thing that John saw when he had this revelation. So here's what I want you to do. I need everybody to close your eyes for a moment. Just close your eyes. You're following online. Just close your eyes for just a moment. And I want to read to you what John saw. And as I read this to you, what I want you to do, because again, this is about a revelation, is I want you with your mind's eye, I want you to allow your mind to paint this image vividly in front of you. What did John see? Here's what John saw. Revelation 1, verses 12 through 16. It says, when I turned to see who was speaking to me, I saw seven gold lampstands, and standing in the middle of the lampstands was someone like the Son of Man. He was wearing a long robe with a gold sash across his chest. His head and his hair were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were like flames of fire. His feet were like polished bronze refined in a furnace, and his voice thundered like mighty ocean waves. He held seven stars in his right hand, and a sharp two-edged sword came out from his mouth, and his face was like the sun in all its brilliance. This is what John saw. So I wanted you to picture this. What did John see? He saw, as he looked, seven gold lampstand. And amongst this lampstand was one that says is like the Son of Man. What is the Son of Man? By the way, that was a phrase that was used by Daniel in Daniel 7 and was Jesus' favorite phrase that he used about himself. And the image that John sees is this image of someone with white hair and a long robe and a sword sticking out of his mouth. Can I just ask you a question today? Can I just ask you a simple question? Do you think that's what Jesus looks like? Do you think it's really what Jesus looks like? Maybe. We also see him as a lamb slain in a few chapters later. What do we see? What are we seeing? Can I just suggest to you that every single part of what was revealed to John about Jesus was imagery meant to represent and only the slightest bit of who Jesus really is? Can I just tell you that, like, for example, the robe, you know, the long robe that would go down to his feet? That's what priests wore when they went into the temple to represent God and man and to bring them together. This long robe with a sash, a golden sash around his chest, I think, may represent that Jesus is the one final high priest that represents all of us before God. And he walks in there, right, into the temple to represent us. And what do we see? His hair. His hair is white. His white like wool. Oh, well, I guess he's aged a little bit. It has been 60 years. No, it's not meant to represent what we often think of, which is frailty or weakness. And so, no, it tended to represent wisdom, that Jesus has supreme wisdom over everything in our world. And his eyes were like flames of fire, almost like as if every time Jesus looks at you, that it can burn right through your very soul, that he can see all and he knows all. And you see his feet that were this burnished brass or bronze, which is like mixed metals. And I wonder if maybe that represents that both his divinity and his humanity came down together to form the perfect foundation for what God would use to rescue and save mankind. You think about his voice, it was the sound of mighty rushing waters to indicate the power of Jesus. Just one word had creative power to change the world. When I think about his hand that had the power, he was holding seven stars in his hand that represent his authority over the angels and over every spiritual being there is. And out of his mouth is a sword, a double-edged sword that is able to bring truth and divide between soul and spirit, joint and marrow. It's the truth that ends up piercing our hearts. And you think about his face that radiates with the countenance and the brilliance of the glory of God. This is who Jesus is. And I wonder if God gave John this revelation of Jesus for the church because they're persecuted. And the emperor seems so big. God's saying, the emperor is nothing compared to who Jesus is. He sees this and it scares him to death. And I love what happens. I'm gonna finish with these two verses. Verse 17, John said, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as if I were dead. But he laid his right hand on me and he said, don't be afraid. Can I say, if you're a follower of Jesus, I would love for you to receive those three words today. Don't be afraid. I love that. I am the first and the last. I am the living one. I died, but look, I'm alive forever and ever, and I hold the keys of death and the grave. I have already overcome. I hold the keys. I have the authority. I've already won. I am the beginning. Genesis, I am Revelation, the Alpha. I'm the beginning. I'll be there at the end. I am all powerful over all, in control of all. You don't need to freak out. You don't need to worry. You don't need to live in fear because I am going to take care of you because I hold it all together in me. Like, if we could get that revelation of Jesus, I wonder what it would do in our soul. I wonder if we'd stop being so afraid of every single social media scholar out there that's telling us this and that sign and that sign. I don't need to worry about that because my Jesus is in control and I know that he loves me and I know he's going to protect me and I don't need to live in fear. And if we got that kind of vision of Jesus, I wonder if it would change how we live. I wonder if we could live with a greater sense of urgency and purpose. Can I just say this? I don't know when Jesus is coming back. It's amazing to me how many people would literally look at the words of Jesus when he would say, I don't even know. He doesn't know, only the Father. And yet we try to predict it and we try to do this and cause panic and fear. And it's like, man, Jesus could be coming back anytime. I don't know if he'll come back in my lifetime. Do you know what is probably more probable? Is that my life is shorter than I could even imagine. And tomorrow is not guaranteed. And so I should live every day with a sense of urgency for the mission and the purpose of Jesus, knowing I don't know what tomorrow brings. Whether Jesus comes back, whether I die in a car accident, I don't know, but I wanna live every day like it matters, every day with a sense of purpose that I'm gonna live as Jesus in this world, amen? Come on, why don't you stand to your feet with me? Would you just stand up with me? As we begin this series together, I want, if anything, just to free you as a follower of Jesus of living in fear and to get a bigger vision of who he is. That's the point of this. So you just bow your heads for a moment, just close your eyes, and God, we just come to you right now, Lord, with a lot of expectation about the series. Also, God, come to you right now, noticing there's so many things going on in our world that maybe seem scary, God. There's wars, there's famine, there's the threat of nuclear destruction. There's so many things going on that I think that many of us, God, maybe have been living with a low-grade fever. I just pray right now, God, that you would just free us of that. I pray, God, that what would replace that is a bigger vision of who you are.
Thanks so much for tuning into this message. I hope that it encouraged you and inspired your faith. If God is doing something in your life, would you take a moment and let us know? We want to connect with you and we want to be able to pray for you. All you have to do is shoot us an email to hello@thex.church, or you can always send us a DM on one of our social media platforms. And if you know somebody that would also be encouraged by this very message, why not take a moment and just share it with them right now? And as always, I want to say thank you to every single person who so generously financially supports this ministry so we can continue to get messages like these out to people all over the world. We believe God is building something special and you're a significant part of it. Until next time, have a great day.